Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers. I am your host, Garrett Wong, and of course, my co-host, Robbie Duncan McNeil.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, Robbie.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm back in Calgary, so I'm wearing my Canadian.
I noticed that.
Yes.
I noticed your Blue Jays hat. I have the Georgia Bulldogs hat on today because.
Oh, yeah. They were playing today.
They did. They played today. They shut down the number 8 team, Arkansas.
That is not easy to do. To give the other team a donut, a zero. Wow.
We did that with Clemson, too. Not to get too sportsy, ball-y, but yeah, we have a good team at Georgia this year. So far, so good.
I'm going to say that I think this might be the year.
This might be. That's a lot of people are saying.
I think, I'm not going to say might. I'm going to say this is the year. Because when you, let's face it, what is the old adage? The defense wins championships.
We have an unbelievable offense. Defense.
No. The defense is that good. To shut out the number 8 team in the nation?
Yeah.
Come on. They couldn't even score a field goal? I mean, what?
They got nothing. And we shut down Clemson in the opener 10 to nothing. And they were the number 3 team. So, okay.
Is it your defensive ends? Who is it? Who's
it's
doing
the whole
this?
Defense.
It's everybody.
It's teamwork, which is about what Star Trek is about. It's about teamwork. It's the fact that
look at Robbie reeling it back in. He's like,
I'm telling you. But the Voyager cast, like Janeway says all the time, she didn't want to split us up in escape pods and separate us because we need to work together. That's how the Georgia defense is this year.
All right. So if we're talking about Star Trek, let's just talk about both. Let's talk about each character on Voyager and what position they would play on this football team. Come on, Robbie.
Okay, really quick.
Yeah, really quickly.
Definitely the coach.
She's the QB.
Is other quarterback. Yeah.
She's the QB. Okay. So she's the quarterback.
She's in the game. All right.
She's in the game. Or no, make her the coach. Make her the coach. Make Chakotay the quarterback because Robert Beltran played quarterback in high school. He was a starting quarterback in high school. So he'll be the QB.
Okay.
All right. So what is Paris? What are you in this team?
I feel like I'm playing defense in this team. I feel like I'm a safety, maybe? Because he kind of freelances in the, on the background. So I'm going to
all right.
Safety.
Perfect.
Paris. What about
you're
Harry?
The safety. Harry is a, he's a wide receiver. He's a very fast, shifty wide receiver. So I'll play I'll be wide receiver.
Okay.
And then maybe slot receiver. And then let's go with, I'm going to say Neelix is our running back. Okay. Neelix is our running back.
Okay.
You take that one.
Yeah.
And what are you going to put? Where are you putting Tuvok? What do you think Tuvok is?
I think Tuvok is special teams. I'm going to go with he's the field goal kicker. Okay.
That's perfect. Love that. What's the doctor? What's the doctor on our football team?
Doctor,
that's a little more tougher.
He's the team medic.
He's a team medic. He's not even playing. Okay. He's the team doctor. Okay.
Yes. He's the trainer.
That's fine. That's fine. Who do we have left? We have B'Elanna. What are you going to put her?
B'Elanna would be...
I think you go ahead and say your guess.
I'm going to say she's on defense with Paris, and she's going to be a linebacker.
Exactly. I was going to say middle linebacker. So she is the captain of the defense. I'm going to say that.
Exactly.
And then now we got seven of nine. Yeah, 7 of 9.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I do agree.
I'm going to say she's a tight end.
Okay. She'll be tight end. Okay.
She
kind of blocks as well as, she's kind of offense, defense. She's doing a lot of things.
Multi-purpose
right now, right?
And very
she's
important.
She's a multi-purpose.
All right. All right. We've staged our Voyager football team.
We have our Voyager team.
And for all those that don't know anything about football or care, which is probably most of you.
Okay.
That was a fun exercise for Garrett and I. Okay.
Let's talk about our merch store very quickly.
Oh okay? That's exciting.
That's exciting. Yeah,
we've got a bunch of restocked items. Mm-hmm. If you guys want to check out our merch store.
Yeah.
We've got,
it's at, can we give them the web address for that?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Deltaflyers.org. And you can go to shop or store. I think, I don't know, whatever you click on shop or store and you'll see it.
We got restocked items.
What are the restocked items? Let's talk about that.
Prime Corona Works shirt, which was very popular, sold out. Yeah. Lots of people asked for it. So we've got new Corona Works shirts. Yes. We've got the coffee mug that there's coffee in that Nebula mug.
Yes.
That sold out a long time ago.
People have been asking about that forever. So everyone's like, when are the mugs coming back in? So those mugs are back. But Robbie, tell us about the new mugs. We even have new mugs.
We have a new mug for the Christmas holidays coming up, holiday season. We've got all, this is a Christmas mug that's got all the Voyager characters in cartoon form, including Seven of Nine.
Yeah.
And it also has Lieutenant Llama from our Christmas story last year. So
that's perfect.
Lieutenant Llama makes an appearance on the Christmas mug.
And just so everyone knows, last year, the Christmas mug was only available to the contest winners.
Yeah.
We didn't put that up for sale. This year, it's a different mug. It's also a Christmas mug.
With
it's a different
design
with the Seven and the Llama on there, right? So those are the new characters. And now we are offering this in the shop. So now you don't have to win the contest. You can get it on your own. Okay.
Yeah.
Regarding the Corona Works shirts, this is a little bit more tricky. So the first printing of the Corona Works shirts, basically it has the logo as blue and then a gray border between the two and then white. Okay. And then now we have a revised version, which is blue, no border. What shows through is the navy blue of the shirt and then silver ink. So we're going to go ahead and have on the site, you guys will
version
see.
Version two.
But yeah, version two. New and improved, revised version, and original version. Okay, so we'll have both of those available. And there's just to unveil our newest shirt.
Right our here. New shirt is a Yes Ma'am shirt with a cool graphic sort of representing yours truly.
There you go. It's very, I love the graphic because of the way it's, it's so
simple. You kind of have to look at it. It's super simple. And those that know that that's Tom Paris.
You didn't say it with the same kind of, conviction that you normally say it. So I'm going to do it for you. This is the new Yes Ma'am shirt. So here we go.
Yes. People have been asking for that for almost two, since we started. They're like, that's the Tom Paris signature phrase. And the other thing about the merch and all this cool stuff is get your orders in soon for Christmas. We're going to have a coupon special that will start today, October 18th, the day that this episode is dropping for everybody. So when you hear this, now that you've heard all this information, there is a coupon special that you can get. So check our Patreon or social media accounts for details on the coupon and get your Christmas orders in early. So that's news on the store and the items.
And just to emphasize, for those of you who've never purchased any of our shirts, we do print them in both unisex and ladies cut, number one. We also print them with the brand that we use is Next Level, which in my estimation is probably the best shirt.
Good quality. It really
super
is.
Good quality, super soft. Robbie will contest
I'm wearing
that.
He's wearing
Delta Flyers printed on Next Level as well. Exactly.
Super comfy.
Mm-hmm. And for those of you who are clueless about Corona Works, we're like, what is that shirt? It's from Future's End, that wonderful two-parter episode where we go back to Earth. Paris wears some really, really, really cool clothes, dad jeans, especially. That's totally. That's actually probably in now, to be kind of dad-like.
Back.
Yeah, it's coming back. All right. So that's our merch announcement.
That's
so
merch
we had to make that
update.
And so the coupon's coming. It starts today. Today's the day?
October 18th, when this episode is out. We're recording this, obviously.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Time. So you're saying it. Yes. Okay. Yeah. All right. So you don't have to ask what episode we're reviewing now because it's the part two.
Here we go. Part two.
You know that, right?
Yes, I do.
Know that.
I remember that. There's a lot of things I don't remember. I remember that.
But you remember that. Yeah. All right. So why don't we get busy? Let's go watch this episode and we will be right back with our discussion and review of Year of Hell Part 2. Hey, everyone. We're back.
We are back.
From watching Year of Hell 2.
We survived.
That
was hell.
My goodness.
That was hell.
That was just, whoo, boy, Janeway is just... Boy, she's, I don't know.
It was very dramatic, this whole two-parter. Yeah, very dramatic.
It was. Let's go through our poetry synopsis of part two, okay?
Let's do.
Here we go. Here's my haiku.
You got a haiku?
Yeah, it's not, I'm not happy.
Haikus are very, they should be very simple.
I, Well, you know what? I kept coming for the second stanza. I kept coming up with, it was either eight syllables or six. I was like, I can't get seven. So it took me probably 15 minutes to get the seventh syllable. It's the best I could do.
By the way, about our haikus and our limericks and our poetry, I know that some people, they've kind of critiqued our poetry structure and our
what?
Rhyme and rhythm. I just want to say to people, like, we're not poetry.
We're not poets.
Experts. We're not poets. No. And no. Most of all, we want these to be funny or ironic or so. They're not going to be perfect. Oh, they're not going to always have the exact amount of syllables, the exact, you know, perfect structure, but hopefully they're funny for everybody. And we're just having fun. So,
you're telling me that there are limerick experts out there who are critiquing our limericks right now.
Critiquing our limericks and haikus. And, we just want everybody to know, like, we're not trying to pretend to be actual poets.
I just think that's hilarious. I'm so sorry. That's it. But, you know, what is that? What's that old adage? What is it? Whether the people talk bad or critique
good
you or not.
Bad.
Yeah, it's still they're talking about you. So that's the positive there. Okay, here we go. Nice My word. Haiku for Year of Hill Part 2. Thank you. Here we go. Ships falling apart. Chakotay learns about time. Janeway crashes ship.
It's good, but here's the thing I learned from that. This episode has so many parts to it that, like, I don't know how a haiku could capture it. Because I don't even think the limerick doesn't even come close. Like, there's so much. No.
There's a lot of facets to this. Yes.
A lot of angles.
The plot twists and turns are many. So like I could have completely focused on Chakotay's relationship with Anorak in my haiku. And that's it. You know, I could have just talked about those guys mentoring Chakotay. Chakotay bonds with Anorak, whatever. But or I could have just talked about Janeway and her, you know, how many things she had to go through. So you're right. It's very difficult
so many
to encapsulate
facets,
everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I right. see how they came from, let's do this for a whole season was the original pitch.
Yes.
To two episodes.
To two episodes.
Cram it all in. There's a lot.
Okay. Man, that's difficult.
Here's our limerick for Year of Hell Part 2. Voyager's basically a mess. Janeway's strung out from the stress. Tom's plan will work beautifully with a helpful Krennan mutiny. Time's restored with no effects, more or less.
That's good. I like it.
Thank you.
I like it.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah. And again, it's very difficult.
I had to get mutiny in there because you know that was a key part. And I had to get that it was Tom's plan because, let's be honest, Tom basically reset the timeline with his talking to Obrist and...
It was Tom and his gradual nudging or Tom's slow but sure this friendship that develops.
Yeah.
Really, right. I mean, it's you bond. Yeah. I mean, I could have said this. My haiku could have been just Paris and Obrist bonding. Right. That's, playing that little board game. I mean,
the truth is, like, if you take a step back and you look at, like, how did this all get resolved?
Yeah.
Janeway's faith in the ship. And her team kept them alive, but didn't solve the problem. And Chakotay started going down the dark road with his obsession with time. And
he did go down there, but he could still see the big picture. He was still trying to get us out of this situation.
He was.
Right? He says, trust me. Let me do it my way. You know?
Yeah.
So. All right. So let's start with the first scene where Voyager has been hiding in a nebula. It's very pretty inside there, you know, but the problem is
beautiful. It's a class 9 nebula.
Yeah. When you're in a nebula, you know, the issue
there's
is
there's a lot of gas in a nebula.
Gas. Yeah. Comes into this.
Yes.
It's very gassy.
Yes.
There's more gas in a nebula than there is in Robbie and Garrett. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I mean, we have a certain amount of gas that we release, but not as much as a nebula.
No.
That's what I'm saying. Okay.
So we see Harry and Janeway in the corridor, and there's gas everywhere. And the first thing I thought of was the way that this special effects guys did the gas and smoke and things on sets like this was it was liquid nitrogen that they put these tubes all around, and then it was they'd turn on these tanks that were as big as a person. The tank was a big, you know, 6 feet high or something. Mm-hmm. And they'd release the liquid nitrogen, turn it on or off, and it would come out more or less. But it was cold.
Super cold. Oh my God.
So I saw you guys in the corridor and I was like, oh, they must have been freezing cold going through all that smoke.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, we've talked about this before, how now on sets, you guys have LED lighting, correct?
Yeah,
but back in the day, we have that incandescent,
hot
lighting. So typically, all of our sets back then were warm. Whether or not they were darker or lighter in nature, they were always warm from any of the lights they use. Yeah. So that liquid nitrogen, I was happy that they were using that. It was just like, cool down the set for me. Yes. Thank you. And I do remember filming this scene, and I do remember how loud those tanks, yeah. shooting them out like it's like a fire hose. Yeah. And it's very loud.
So you've got to
talk louder.
You got to talk louder. And then you end up looping all these scenes because
you can't even hear it. Right. Yeah. And also those masks, that's the first time we got to wear those oxygen masks.
Yes. You know, it looked like a CPAP machine
It did. It probably was a converted. CPAP machine from home that he converted into our thing.
That's what it looked like to me.
Janeway Kim do have sleep apnea. Little, now we know that.
Yes. Yeah. So they work on this in this panel and trying to seal this ventilation leak that's going on with the gas, nebula gas coming in.
Harry says there's 3 minutes of oxygen left in their tanks. And Janeway says, can you hold your breath? And so then we realize that both Janeway and Harry have essentially burn their lungs. Mm-hmm. What's happening?
Chemical burns.
Yeah, chemical burn. And Harry's gone to sickbay to get treated, but not Janeway. Janeway's still on her feet. The doctor is beseeching her. She's running. She's on the bridge now. And the doctor's telling her, you've got to take the time off to come to get healed by me, you know, and you need it. You just need a break, period. And Janeway says, absolutely not. Just inject me with what is it? Trioxin or something like that.
Trioxin.
Give me a shot of that. Right.
Yes.
So,
and he says, nope, doctors are, he did say Harry Kim is getting treatments and he's, you know, you were supposed to be in there for 8 minutes, no more, not 8 and a half, not 9, and certainly not 12 minutes, you were in there.
Yeah.
Long time. And I like how Mike Vahar, who directed this episode, staged this scene that they were moving around the bridge. The doctor was chasing Janeway.
Oh, it was great.
You got to see all the damage. You got to sort of reset the situation. And doctor's orders. And she's like, give me the shot. Captain's orders.
Yeah.
So you see this sort of doctor captain conflict, which is
power struggle.
Come back. Yeah. Later on.
Did you notice the view screen was completely,
it was like a holodeck or something.
It looked like at first I thought, why are we looking at the holodeck? But in reality, I think what had happened was our standard view screen is really, we can see out of it. Yeah. And it also can project an image on there. But because that thing has been completely blown to pieces or shattered, it just looked like there was some type of plating or cover, you know, they just covered it up and we had just random repair.
I thought the view screen, and I don't know the answer to this, maybe the fans do, but the view screen is not a window looking, like when we see stars or we see the view in front of us, it's not a window that's looking out to space. It's a projection, almost like, you know, now that some of these cars have rear view mirrors that aren't really mirrors. It's a camera. It's the image of what the camera sees in, but it's up on a rear view mirror as if it's a mirror, but it's not. It's a screen coming from the cameras in the back of the, you know, SUV or whatever.
Correct. It's a projection, but I think we typically also have some type of plexiglass window there that we project an image on there as well. We can look out because we haven't had shots where it shows the camera starts from outside of the ship and it comes closer onto where the windows of the bridge are. And we come in.
We've had the bridge. I know we've
had. Can you duck your head for a second to the left? Let me look at the image of the ship behind you. Okay. All right. I'm trying to see if I can see some windows there where the bridge would be. But I always felt that we actually had something that was just a window. You're saying it's just a wall the entire time.
I think it's a holodeck projection.
Hmm.
That's what I and that's when I looked behind her and I And I thought, oh, that's the grid, the holodeck grid that projects everything that we see on the view screen. So okay. I don't know.
Maybe that's what it is. That's a great question, though. But I'd like to know the answer.
It was damaged. Whatever, yeah. However that engineering goes, it was damaged for sure. So then we move to the next scene. It's Chakotay being grabbed inside the brig of the alien ship.
And well, he looks horrible. Right?
He had a porn mustache on. I mean, he looks horrible. Yes.
We talked about this thing. It was drawn on. Almost,
it was bad. this like,
well, again, because this was supposed to be a whole season's worth of episodes, they had to encapsulate everything into two.
All their ideas.
So all this, the scanning, the poking and the prodding that Chakotay refers to, we don't see any of that. We just see him. Yeah. You know, we see him with his 5 o'clock shadow, right?
But he's and got then a next he's scene, got a solid yeah,
he's
mustache.
Got the porn stash. He's got the porn stash. But then the next you see that for a split second, then all of a sudden he's totally cleaned up and he's wearing a really nice, you know, he's in Krenim wardrobe and he's clean shaven. Well, and they've skipped a lot of stuff.
Yeah, Anorax does say, oh, do you feel refreshed, or you look refreshed, or something? Right. So I assume that meant they pulled him out of the brig after all of this testing, and now they've given him a shower and let him shave, and he's you know, now we're gonna try the sweet, you know, the sweet version of
So good cop now. Good so cop, it was bad cop before, now it's good cop. But the funny thing is, do you remember last episode when we reviewed Year of Hell Part 1?
Yes.
I was joking about the fact at the end, I said, yes, Tom and Chakotay have now been abducted by aliens and they're being probed right now. And essentially that is what happened. Yes. You were probed.
We were probed.
Yep. Prodded, poked, scanned for 2 months. And I love how Anorax calls Paris he says, I've never seen such an intransigent young man. So you're intransigent. Yeah. So I had to even look that up for a second. I'm like, what the hell?
Well, that's what Rebecca goes, what is intransigent mean? I was like, it's stubborn, or it's like,
someone who would not see the views of somebody else, basically. Like you're not going to change my mind. To the other side. No, you're not going to change your mind whatsoever. So, first I thought I said intransient, you know, he's intransient.
I'm
intransigent. You're in transit between two places.
Exactly.
So you're a troublemaker, you know, is what he's trying to say, Anorax.
Yeah. Paris has a little attitude in this in this episode. He does.
And then you come in right then after he talks about you for a bit, then you pop in with your one line looking like you know, the guy from oh my gosh, what was that? The Rocketeer, you know. I mean, That's what
I By the way, like, oh I had God. Like this very low cut sort of, you know,
it was kind of like a bomber jacket from the Rocketeer, right?
With a bomber jacket open with all the chest hair exposed.
I didn't look at your chest hair, but I just saw
it. Very hairy chest. I didn't realize I had such a hairy chest when I was younger.
Are you trying to tell me you have less hair now?
I don't think I do. anymore.
So you got older, you shed your chest hair. Does that
happen?
The McNeil clan, maybe with the McNeil family.
Maybe
I don't
it
know.
Does. I don't know, but I didn't realize I had so much chest hair as a younger man.
Yes, you're very hairy. You should have been Harry Paris.
You should have been.
And I would have been Tom Kim. Yes. Tom Kim and Harry Paris. So you look good in that wardrobe. I like that wardrobe.
I like the wardrobe a lot.
I didn't look at your chest hair. I was looking at the wardrobe going, hey, he looks good in that.
Yeah.
And you're not agreeable to anything in this episode. You grumpy. Were fighting against your grumpy butt left and right.
You know what? I came up with the plan. I got it.
You did.
I'm going to do the plan. This mutiny idea, and that's the way we got out of it.
Let's talk about the director here. And it's interesting because I've always felt that as a showrunner, wouldn't it make more sense to have one director doing both? But then again, with the way that we shot stuff, we would always have one director that was prepping while the other director was filming, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the main reason why we have two different directors in part one and two. But part two, directed by Mike Vahar, who, let's talk a little bit about Mike. What were your opinions of, how did you feel about working with Mike?
I loved Mike.
Vahar?
I thought he was great. I think Mike had been an editor before, my memory.
That's right. Served. That's right.
I think he was an editor, so he was very efficient with the way he shot. He was very quiet. I remember him being soft-spoken and very but just very,
very editor like, wouldn't you say? A lot of editors are pretty quiet, kind of, you know,
kind of quiet. But doing their own thing. I liked him a lot, actually. I thought he was a cool guy. And
Agreed. Easy to work with.
Yeah. And I remember, he had lived in Venice, at Venice Beach, for a long, long time.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I was living in Venice. I lived there back when we made the show. Yeah. So we kind of, Mike and I had a lot of like neighborhood spots that we both had in common. And he had been in Venice when it was a really rough area. Mm. And I, you know, when I had come in there, it was already starting to change into a much more gentrified, I guess, kind of neighborhood. And then I think by the time we finished Voyager, Mike had retired near the end of our run. I thought he did a great job in this episode, by the way.
He really did. He really did. He did a great job. I agree. So now the scene is all these amazing dishes are laid forth for you two to eat. And then from his conversation, we then realize that these are all that remain of various civilizations that have been eradicated, have been erased from time.
Yeah, it says the wine is all that's left of a once powerful Malkoth race.
That was so gave me that the creeps at that point. I was thinking like, oh my goodness.
And then I noticed myself that Tom was eating, and part of me was thinking, I was like, before I realized why, but Paris had started eating, and I was like, why was I eating? It feels like a casual thing to do when the scene is about this first confrontation. But then there's a line where he says, "Oh, Mr. Paris, you're devouring what's left of the Alcyon Empire." Right. So I'm sure that I had to eat because they wanted him to say that. But I thought, I don't think I would have eaten in this moment.
Probably not. But then the way I validated your eating was, you guys have been probed and prodded and, you know, for 2 months straight. So probably not getting great food, you know, and probably malnourished. And so this is the first time that you've seen good food in front of you. So I assumed that's what it was. But because we don't see that lead up to this point, we don't see any of those scenes that we don't really get the, you know, it just seems a little casual because you don't see what happened before this. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
You know, Anorax the end of this scene is basically Anorax proposes a deal. Yes. Okay. Paris doesn't buy it at all. Paris is like, I'm done. No, forget it. I'm not going to help you. This is ridiculous. You know, how many more civilizations and how many more people are you going to kill? This is ridiculous. Yeah. I'm not into this. And Chakotay is like, sit down. No, we're going to work on this together. We're just Mr. Paris, chill out. So that's the end of that scene. Mm-hmm. And you don't recall shooting it. Do you remember shooting any of these?
As I watched this episode, some of these did come back to me, like the scene with Oberst, where I'm playing the game.
Yeah.
And I'll get to that once we get to Oberst. Yeah. I do remember. But yeah. And by the way, he says, Anorax says to Chakotay, he says, you know, I feel in you this instinct of time, Chakotay, that you connect in the same way that I do.
Right.
With the art of time. He starts talking about, you know, how Chakotay connects. And it reminded me of a book that I read years ago. And I actually was thinking about this book recently. I wanted to reread it. It's a book called Time and the Art of Living. And it talks about time kind of philosophically.
Ooh, about this.
Yeah. About how the past, the present, the future, like there is no other time than this moment. And then there's no other time than this moment.
Yeah.
But yet the past and the future are also in this timeline that are all one thing. And it's
very much like this episode,
very much like this episode. And that book, Time and the Art of Living, came to mind as I watched the scene and as I heard him talking about the art of time. We go to the mess hall, though, in the next scene. There is what looks like a dinner party. They're sort of toasting and then they all sort of drink this drink. And you see everyone's reaction is like, and you realize Neelix says he has concocted this thing and he's named it the Elixir of Endurance. And I love
this is something that we should offer in our store as well.
Yes, the Elixir of Endurance. I love Seven's line when she drinks it and she goes, It is offensive. It literally made me laugh out loud.
Can we say that at some point in our lives? You know, if we don't like the taste of something, it is offensive.
Janeway says to the group, she wants to go back to open space. They can't stay hiding out here forever. And we need to go back to open space and gather a fighting force. So you see what her strategy is to like confront them. And Seven disagrees. Seven says, no, you know, the ship is too damaged. We should, you know, wait until we can get more repairs done and then decide. And Janeway basically finishes the scene with, nope, we're getting out of here. We're leaving tomorrow. So
that's right. That's right. But it is a beautiful exterior. It's a beautiful, you can look out the window there from the mess hall and all you see is that beautiful purple nebula. So it is some, you know, something nice to look at, even though everything else is just, you know, gone to poop. So she makes the decision. We've got to go. And Seven is sort of like not advisable until we're at full capacity. And Captain Janeway kind of sets her straight and says, no, we're not doing that. We're going to go. We're going to do this.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We jump over to the corridor and it's a great scene.
The way that Tuvok lost his eyesight because Seven insisted on staying at that panel when Tuvok said, you've got to get out of here. It's going to blow up.
Right.
And he protected Seven. So she feels this obligation to walk him around everywhere because he's blind, which is a very sweet detail of this, both these episodes.
True.
So Tuvok is being escorted by Seven down the dark corridor, and he says, you know, it is inappropriate to contradict the captain's authority. Mm-hmm. And Seven sort of doesn't understand this.
Yep. And Tuvok says, Captain, just remember, the captain is always right.
Always right.
And she's like, you even believe that? He's like, perhaps at the end. He's like, yeah. But still, I love this interaction between the two stoic, you know, non-emotional characters. And, and people that think that two non-emotional characters in a scene is boring is incorrect. I think it's very interesting. I like this.
I thought it was great. We go back over to Anorak's ship, and Chakotay tells Anorak about this rogue comet that forced them into Krenim space. And he's thinking... Yeah. If they could get rid of this comet, then it wouldn't force them into Krenim space. And then this whole timeline, like they could fix it that way. And so Anorak is like, you think that's going to work? Okay. Run a simulation on that. See what that does.
Yeah.
So Chakotay goes over and he runs a simulation on the computer and you see this thing wipe out. Basically, it turns out it would wipe out about 8,000 entire civilizations in that timeline.
Yeah, not 8,000 civilizations, not 8,000 people, 8,000 civilizations.
Yeah, this comet that Chakotay wants to get rid of for his own purposes actually ended up being helpful in starting the evolutionary process that led to all of these civilizations. Yeah. So he does, and Anorak says something here. Again, it reminded me of this book. He said the past, the present and the future, they exist as one. They breathe together. Mm-hmm. And I love the way he put that. It's beautifully written. And it reminds me of this book where it talks about the art of time. And from a philosophical perspective, if you can imagine that time is one thing. So people who have been dear to us in our lives, dear to me in my life, for example, who have died.
Yep.
When I sometimes think of those relationships, I think about this book because it brings time, all time, into one moment, into the now. And it reminds me that those people who are important to me are still here with me in some way. If time is the past, present, and future, breathing is one.
Yeah.
Exist as one. So I just love this idea, even though I struggle with time travel and timeline stories, usually in science fiction, some of the way it's described in this episode really made sense to me.
Yeah, so Anorax is showing Chakotay the ropes, basically. And we learned from this conversation that Anorax has been at it for 200 years.
Yes.
That's a long time trying to get the timeline corrected to where he wants it. We jump back to the bridge, and the ship is now being bombarded by these meteorites.
Micro meteor
shower? Is that what it is?
It says micro meteoroid shower. I've never
micro
meteoroid shower. Which is like tiny little, you know, like stones, but they're just hitting the ship, pelting the ship. That and we don't have any shields.
No.
So Janeway says, what about deflector control? We don't have we've lost deflector
it's
control.
Offline. Yes.
Yeah. And she says, you'll find me. I'll be in the deflector control room. And Tuvok says, that's a hazard level four. You can't go there. And she goes anyway.
She goes anyway.
She goes anyway. We see her going down the hall. We see her open this door, and then there's fire inside the deflector control room. And the way that we do this, just so you know, when you shoot fire scenes like this, when she opens the door, that you see fire in front of the lens, there's just a little fire bar that they put. It's like what you would have on your grill at home.
Yeah, it's
and they
so
just
funny.
Stick it on a stand, and it comes up in front of the lens, so it looks like. From what the lens sees, that there's fire in the whole room, and there's the actor pretending like there's fire everywhere.
Yeah.
And there's lights usually interacting on their face to make it look like there's a lot more flames. It's usually just a little bar in front of the lens, and that's all that's there.
Yeah. There's no danger to Kate Mulgrew whatsoever. Yeah. She's not going to get burned. Don't worry. But I love how after she sees the fire, she looks around and she's like, okay. And she picks up a little piece of rubble as a shield. So she picks up basically a piece of corkboard is what it is. Yeah. And she decides to go through and run into that room.
Runs into the fire. Yeah. And then Harry talks through what she's doing. So we go back to Harry there.
Yeah.
And he's basically, so we don't see her dealing with this fire. We just hear him saying she's doing this, she's doing that.
Right.
And then when we finally cut back to her, she's laying on the floor.
Well, before we cut back, it's dead quiet. We don't hear anything from her.
Oh, yeah.
So they were like, oh boy. And then it cuts back to her on the floor, totally burned and disfigured.
Unconscious.
Looking.
And yes. So that must have been a pretty big makeup job because.
Huge.
Yeah.
Makeup job. Yeah. Big time. And then, the doctor is basically treating her in the mess hall triage area. And we find out that she has suffered third degree burns to 60% of her body. And the doctor, after a long conversation, it's still the power struggle between the doctor and Janeway is happening.
He's insisting this time.
He's insisting.
And he says, I forget what he says, but basically like you've had, crisis fatigue syndrome or whatever he called it. I forget what he called it, but he's like,
I think he said traumatic stress syndrome.
Said. Yeah. That sounds right.
Yeah.
And he says, I have the power to relieve you of duty, Captain, as the chief medical officer. Mm-hmm. And
she says, then I will deactivate
your program. Ooh, okay.
And then she apologizes though, right? So at least she felt bad about that.
Yeah, she's still gonna go. And so he says, okay, I'm gonna relieve you of duty. And he talks to the computer.
Yeah.
And then she's like, what are you gonna do? How are you gonna enforce this? Because
there's no brig.
There's no, my chief security officer is injured.
There's no security detail. There is a security officer, but he's blind.
He's
so
blind.
How is he gonna find
how
me?
How are you gonna enforce this?
Yeah, it's not gonna happen.
And she says, I'm out of here. So, he even says, the doctor even says, you could be court-martialed when we go home. If you survive this and if we go home, you are doing something that is very against Starfleet protocols.
So, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So the next thing it we see on the screen, day 207 at this point.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
And we see Janeway walking down a corridor
with Neelix,
and they're assessing the ship damage, and it's a corridor walk, and they end up at Chakotay's quarters.
Yes.
And she walks inside, and it's really damaged. You see this kind of tender moment. She's looking around, and then she sees
the music changes too. You hear it; it gets all JC emotional Shipper music. Yes,
JC Shipper, and she sees the pocket watch that he had tried to give her for her birthday. It's lying on the floor, and she says, "Wow, he disobeyed orders. He didn't recycle this watch."
Yeah, and there's not a scuff on it. That's what's so funny. It's in perfect shape.
Yeah, like everything shiny.
Everything else, including everyone's faces, is covered with soot. But this pocket watch is pristine. There's nothing.
But it's a sweet moment. One of those moments I thought was very poetic and very you know, sweet. And I like that's the stuff about this episode that I really like, these kind of moments. And I love how she puts it on her hip and sort of asks Neelix, like, hey, what do you think? How does it look?
Yeah. Now that's her good luck charm.
Yeah.
From her Chakotay.
Exactly.
Her darling Chakotay. So we're now in the Krynim time ship, which is, I think we're in maybe a public space or something like that. It's not anyone's. Maybe it's
Maybe it's somebody's quarters.
Yeah, lounge, or could be Oberyn's quarters.
I don't think it is. Right? Public space, because they wouldn't be talking.
Yeah, they wouldn't be talking like that. So it's Oberyn's quarters, because he's the first officer. So clearly he's got some pretty big or decent sized quarters.
Yeah. Thinking, and this is the scene. So we come into Paris and Oberyn playing some kind of game. It looks like checkers,
like a board game.
Futuristic
Chinese checkers.
Yeah. And Paris wins. Mm-hmm. Just as we come in, he's like, chick, 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 makes the moves. Okay, I win. And Oberyn says something like, your endgame sequence was the same one favored by my brother.
Right.
And kind of takes a moment that you can see he's moved. And Paris even says, well, to quote a long lost friend of mine talking about Tuvok, it seemed like the logical move, which I thought was a nice little thing. So in this scene, as I was rewatching it, all of a sudden, a lot of things did come back to me. I remembered filming this scene. I remember playing this game, because we were making up some game that didn't exist, obviously.
Yeah.
And I remember having long conversations with John Loprino, who played Oberst, because John, and I didn't remember this last week when we watched the part one, he was, when we were filming this episode, doing these scenes, we realized that we had both been on ABC soap operas at the same time. I was on All My Children. He was on One Life to Live. And studios were only a block apart.
And
so our paths would cross all the time. And he was on One Life to Live with a very good friend of mine named Doug Wirt, who I'm still friends with to this day. And John Loprino. Yeah. So I remember having a lot of like ABC soap opera from the 80s conversations with him when we were filming this scene.
Yeah.
He played.
You had a little bonding with him.
Cord Roberts. I looked it up, what he played in One Life to Live. But anyway, so Oberst is in the scene. He's haunted by celebrating the birthday of his brother, because he realized that he's celebrating birthdays of dead people and people who never existed. And he feels horrible. And there's a moment there where you see Paris sort of respond. And Paris goes, you know, takes a long pause and says, I am so sorry. And it was a really sweet, I thought I really liked that scene a lot.
I did too. Now, my question for you was that game or that last move made up by you?
I think
did
so.
You come,
yeah,
so,
I think the props guys, so it was, I think, John Nestoritz or Charlie Russo probably on set were our props guys. And I think they sort of had an idea in mind. But I think it was me and the director. We just kind of said, all right, how many moves do you want? And we didn't really figure out how the whole game works. But
I seem to recall head of props was Alan Sims. Is
Alan
that right?
Sims was the head, but he usually wasn't on set. It was usually Johnny Nestoritz or Charlie Russo.
Right. But the times that he was on set, I recall you know, anyone from props, whenever we had something new to work with, they would say, well, you know, you could do this. And they would show us like, okay, if you
can move
this around, some ideas, or you could try this. And so they, so we were, from what I recall, we were never, ever given like, you must move this way and then to the left and then 5 degrees to the right. Nothing precise like that. It was always, the props guys were like, look, this is what we constructed. This part of the prop moves like this. This does this. And if you want, you could do something like this, or you could do something like that. And then I think the actor was left up with the final decision, which is so rare because, you know, we never got to change the lines. We never got to do, we were so locked into that script. And so to have a little bit of freedom to be able to do something different with the blocking of something that's a prop was kind of nice to have that, you know, you felt you were being creative at least.
Yeah. Right? So. And making it make sense in the logic of the scene, you know, it was nice that they gave us props and gave us the freedom to sort of figure out moves that would make the most sense. And so I thought that was great. Paris now tells Chakotay
in Chakotay's quarters.
In Chakotay's quarters, he comes in. He says he's got a plan. That the shields of this ship are very weak, and if you can just take this core offline, conventional weapons would easily take this ship. So Chakotay says, you know, that he wants to solve this problem. If he can just figure out the right calculation, he can solve this. And he and Paris start getting into an argument. Paris is like, this crew is ready to mutiny. They've been doing this for 200 years. And
that's the other weakness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The crew is a weakness. The ship is a weakness. Like, why are you trying to solve this like anoraks?
Yeah.
I made the note that Chakotay is starting to sound like anoraks already. I don't remember if Paris literally said that as a line, but clearly you start to see Chakotay sort of going down the anoraks road of he can get the, you know, save Voyager with the right calculations. And
correct. And Paris says like, you know what, I'm just going to do my own thing. And then that's when Chakotay goes, no. Now this is an order.
This is an order.
And then, and then you were like, being the smart aleck that Paris is, he's like, oh really? You're going to take away my rations while we're here? What are you going to do? And then Chakotay goes, no, if you disobey, we're going to have to handle it the old fashioned way. We're going to have to throw down is what it is. And I started laughing so hard, just imagining Chakotay and Paris in a fist fight. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Well, they have some history, you know, that they, you know,
when we
first got on the ship, there was definitely tension there that never really got resolved. So
there's tension.
There's stuff there. Yeah. He says, we'll settle our differences the old fashioned way. And then before anyone can respond beyond that, an alarm goes off.
That's right.
And we cut to the bridge of this time ship, and they're preparing for a temporal incursion to eradicate the Rom Izad, this planet, this species called the Rom Izad. And he basically fires this temporal weapon, and it destroys the planet, or it's a total erasure of that species.
Gone.
And he does it, and Paris says, is this what you call enlightened? You know, he says to Chakotay. And Paris also says to Chakotay, if you don't do something about this maniac, I will. So this tension is still there, and Paris still believes they've got to take this into their own hands, and trying to play nice guy and play along with him is not going to work. Yeah. But that's not resolved yet, and Chakotay goes into Anorax's quarters. And
actually, I would say that would be Anorax's ready room, because it's right off the bridge, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Yes. And
he confronts him. He's like, you didn't have to take out that planet. Why'd you do that? Right. And then we find out through the conversation that it's all about trying to get Kiana Prime back, this one colony.
Yeah.
Right. That's the whole, this is what's been driving Anorax for 200 years.
Keanu Prime. I just love that they named it after Keanu Reeves.
It's awesome. Kiana instead of Keanu. It's not a new, but if you want to call it Keanu, you can. I'm going to call it Kiana Prime. Fine. I'll switch to your side.
But Chakotay knows. Chakotay knows this is about Keanu Prime. And he says, what did you lose? Like, what is it?
Yeah.
Because he's done the calculation. So he's kind of down that Anorax road. He's in the Anorax, you know, team Anorax a little bit. And and Anorax says it with his wife, his children, his grandchildren.
His whole future was erased.
It was all erased, and he's trying to fix it. And he also talks about time having moods. which I thought was interesting.
Well, yeah, the personification of time by Anorax is very interesting. It's time has become a person. It's become an individual that he's dealing with, right? Yep. And and that final line that he says that only time can pronounce judgment against me. Mm-hmm. So time itself, and he talks about time getting angry too, being angry at him, you know. So yeah, everything is now personified, which is very, very interesting. And, you know, and also just, I just want to say, man, you guys have free run of the ship. I mean, after being confined in
they really trust us.
They probed you guys for so long, then they were like, you know what? That's fine. They can just have, they can get their own quarters. They can walk around. They can do anything they want.
They can have all the food they want. Yeah. It's a little, it's a big jump.
It's a big jump. But see, if this was a year long worth of episodes, it wouldn't have been a big jump. We would have seen the gradual procession.
Because it had to happen so fast, I think the way that they rationalize that is that Chakotay is really befriending Anorax. Like, you know, Anorax and Chakotay feel like they're in sync.
They both respect each other and they both admire each other. Yeah. It's clear that, you know, this is the bromance. This is the Chakotay Anorax bromance for sure.
So we go from that scene with Anorax and Chakotay, and now we're with Paris and Chakotay.
In Chakotay's quarters.
Quarters, and Paris is pissed.
Oh, so much arguing going on.
And Chakotay's, you know, kind of rationalizing in the beginning. And Paris
Paris says to Chakotay that Anorax is insane, and then Chakotay immediately counters, no, not insane, wounded, maybe tortured. Right. Yeah. So he's still on the Anorax.
Defending path. Anorax.
Defending him. Yeah. This is
and
my
he
bro.
Says, he says, yeah, Anorax lost his family. And then Paris responds, We lost our family.
Yes. Yes.
Like, sure. He lost his family. We lost our family. Our Voyager family. Yeah. And that's when Chakotay finally listens.
That's the click. Yeah. That's the click. That is when the light switch gets turned on. And that's when Chakotay says,
okay, tell me what
send you got. A message. Yeah. Send a message. Yeah. Tell me what you got. And then send a message to Janeway. Yeah. Tell her where we're at. Right.
So yeah. And Paris says, he says, okay, I'll tell you what's up. I talked to Obrist, and Obrist says we can use this communicator. He can open a communication channel. We can send a message to Voyager.
Right.
And
you can send it from your own quarters.
Yeah, he says send that. It from your own quarters. And Paris says, you know, so we'll send a message to Janeway if she's still alive. And Chakotay's like, oh, she's alive. Oh, yeah, she's he's so sure she's alive. And well, again,
to the JC shippers, when you're in love with somebody, you can feel if they're alive.
This is what I'm saying. And then Chakotay says, okay, go send Janeway a message. And Paris starts to leave. And he goes, oh, and Tom, he says, give Catherine my best. Another, like between the, oh, she's alive and give her my best. What are the fans supposed to think? Like the writers wrote this.
Yeah.
Like there's some special connection in the watch, the pocket watch, and she's going to wear it. And I don't know. It's just, I don't know how the writers did not put them together.
Well, yeah. And the best subtext is, my love, give her my love, not my best. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now we have an exterior shot in space and we see Voyager and then we see four other ships. We see two ships, which we learned to be Nahidran ships, and two Mawasi ships. Now, if you remember, when we read the Netflix synopsis, they talked about an armada, an armada of ships.
I was picturing now, hundreds this is a, of ships.
Yes, including Voyager. That's a quintet. That's four alien ships. And then later we learn there's a third ship that pops in there. So there's six ships that come against them, but we don't see that in this exterior shot. So somebody screwed up in terms of getting the right number. Yeah, I mean, well, not only the armada, but it should have been six ships on screen instead of the five right now, because later they refer to as six ships coming against the time ship and armada. And then Janeway talks about the fleet. Again, a fleet or armada is dozens of ships, right? Or maybe hundreds of ships, not four or five or six. Yeah.
So, it was a little skimpy.
Yeah, a little skimpy armada.
But we go onto the bridge and Janeway's telling everybody that she's analyzed this transmission, this communication. Mm-hmm. It is real because Paris sent this code, whatever the Starfleet code that is kind of super secret and couldn't possibly be anybody else. So he sent this message. It's real. And when they're in range, he will take the core offline and then they can disable the ships, basically.
Yeah.
So she says to Harry and B'Elanna, you guys arm the temporal shielding.
Torres expresses her concerns, which Janeway sort of says, no, it's okay. And then in private, Tuvok expresses his concerns that maybe she should abandon this ship. Yeah, this survival.
The odds of success are marginal, he says.
Right. And then I thought, this is a really interesting parallel, because now you have Janeway speaking to Tuvok, and there is a personification of the Voyager ship.
Yeah, he says,
she's.
I love this line. Tuvok has a line. He says, quote, I have never understood the human compulsion to emotionally bond with inanimate objects.
Yeah.
This vessel has done nothing. It's an assemblage of bulkheads, conduits, and tritanium. Nothing more. Right. Mm-hmm. And he really just lays it out there. Like, this is just a thing.
Yeah.
Like, and she says she feels as close to Voyager, to the ship, as any other member of her crew.
Yeah.
She personifies this ship.
Yeah, and not unlike Anorak's personifying time. You know, it's the same thing. It's just
the
like,
other thing that came to my mind when she was talking about she feels as close to Voyager as any member of the crew.
Yeah.
And I remember when we first started this show and we had that lunch over in the at the commissary dining room.
Yeah.
And I feel like I remember whether it was to all of us, the whole group, or whether it was just to me in a side conversation with Rick Berman or one of the writers or someone, but they said something like, I think it was Rick. He said, you know, the star of this show is the ship. It's not the actors. It's the ship. And when I heard this description of, well, this vessel is nothing more than an assemblage of bulkheads, conduits, tritanium, nothing more. And then Janeway defending it going, no, this is just like a crew member. My mind went to, oh, that's like what Rick said. It's like a cast member. Yeah. It's not only like a cast member. It is the star.
The cast member.
The Voyager is the star, according to that conversation before we started filming the show. And then it's probably the captain is the co-star. And the rest of us are just like, you know, from a writer's point of view, I said, this is what I got from that comment and at our lunch that time is like, all of you are sort of dispensable and you serve the ship and the ship is the star.
Okay.
Which I thought was a really.
I don't
really
recall him saying that. So this might've been an aside to you.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm thinking. I just remember that conversation about all of you human characters, deliver your lines, less emotional, very military. Yeah. To make all the aliens look real. That's what I recall, which some people have disputed me on that, but I'm going to stand by my guns on that one.
Well, I thought it was just interesting that in the writing, they sort of supported the same idea that this ship is a cast member, whether it's the star or not, I guess is debatable, but.
Well, and Brannon being the star protege of Rick Berman, that would make sense, you know, for him to, since he wrote this episode, right?
I also really want to say, I love this moment where she hugs Tuvok and there's a long, really meaningful hug. And then you see Tuvok's hand come up.
Slowly, and he slowly hugs her back.
And hugs her back, which is great.
Yeah, it was a good moment.
And then Seven stepping in, you know, very sweetly to take Tuvok away. And then Janeway walks around to her chair, and the camera kind of moves around as she gets in front of her chair. And then she looks to Chakotay's chair, his empty chair, and checks the watch that she's got on her hip.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, that's awesome. And
touching.
Then the camera pulled back with her just sitting alone on the bridge. She's going to do this by herself. Great shot by Mike Zahar. Great concept from the writers. Just all around that whole scene and that moment worked so well for me.
Now, you know, the battle scene now that comes up, it's a little confusing to me because all the ships have been equipped with temporal shielding. Okay, so typically that means we are impervious to that weapon that they have, right? Yeah. But yet as we start the battle, the two the Hydran ships, you know, they take a couple of shots, they peel off, and as they're flying away for a second, they're about to come around for a second pass, and that's when the time ship fires, and they're gone. It's like, those shields did nothing. It was like, how did you interpret that part?
Yeah, I guess I did interpret it that it was the temporal weapon working on them.
Right. But they had temporal shields, evidently. So because they talked about that before. So that shouldn't have worked so effectively on them. But regardless, then the tension is up there because now we can see they can just take people out so quickly. And Janeway is now getting a little nervous. And she's like, well, I'm still waiting for Mr. Paris to deactivate the core.
And we see Tom in this room typing away on the smallest keypad I've ever seen.
But that's what's so funny to me, because it's so tiny and the
it's on the game
stakes
table.
Are so high. But yes, but the it's stakes still, are so high.
The stakes are so high, and he's back at the game table.
But with
it's like it's the size of a tricorder or something.
Do you want to? Okay, this is the metaphor, is it, or the analogy? I'm going to say it's sort of like somebody needing something typed up to get to meet a deadline for a newspaper, and they cut over. They're like, "Look, we've got 2 minutes left, and we got to get the story done." And they cut over to the junior copywriter guy, and he's typing on the typewriter one finger at a time. That's what it looked like to me. I'm laughing, going like, "Oh my god, the tension is so high." But Paris has to be slow about it because it's so tiny. You can't really go fast on a tiny, tiny little.
They even
console.
Had an insert of his fingers and you saw like six alien letters, and that was about what combination of these six letters could you possibly, how long can you type on this little tiny thing?
No, so. Thank God Oberst, who did ABC soap operas with you. He saves the day. He's like,
with a real typewriter.
Yeah. He's just
with a real keyboard.
Yeah. So he's the one that just ends up deactivating the core, not Paris, because Paris is too slow on the tiny console. And he beams you and Chakotay over to one of the Moasi ships, not Voyager, but one of the Moasi ships.
Yep.
Which is, again, it's all Paris's doing to convince him that he needs to mutiny now. And so that was really the saving grace for this episode.
Again, Paris saved the timeline.
Paris saves the day. He saved
the show.
The
we would have been dead. Yeah. The ship would have been destroyed because in a moment, conventional weapons are armed. They start firing.
Yeah.
And there is a great spaceship collision with one of the
Hydran. Yeah.
It kind of comes sideways and collides into Voyager. And you see Janeway crawling across the debris on the floor. The view screen is now wide open to space. Like the ship has come apart and you just see a bit of a force field holding, you know, the oxygen inside because it's wide open to space.
Yeah.
And she sets a collision course with Anorak's ship.
And that's a gamble. You know, she doesn't know that this is going to work, right? But she tells everyone else, disable your temporal shields, because when this thing blows, you want to make sure that you're not shielded from it. You want to be part of the reset of this timeline.
Yeah.
Right.
She wants to restore and reset.
It's going to be restored. Yeah.
Yes. And I love when she gets in position to collide, to take that, that moment. She says, time's up.
Time's up.
But it's like two sentences. Like, it's very dramatic. It's great. Great reading.
I do like, just to go back a little bit, I do love the beam out effect that the Krenim beaming transporter technology does. It looks totally different from what we used, you know, whenever you see a Starfleet transporter working, it's a different effect than the Krenim one, which it should be, right? It shouldn't look exactly the same. So I kind of like the Krenim beaming effect. So Janeway goes kamikaze and it does save the day. It does save the day. It resets everything, right? We're back where the astromech
is. And we see his little altar with his wife's hair. We see that crash in slow motion, which is funny because we didn't often use slow motion. And in this season four of our show is the first time now I feel like I've seen this twice, maybe three times, some slow motion, which we never used, hardly ever.
No, but notice the other time that it was used was in Year of Hell Part 1 when Janeway's licky coffee falls.
Yeah.
Remember? And so that was slow-mo and it breaks. So this was sort of like the bookend slow-mo breaking thing, right? So that was the theme, I think.
That's right.
Know? Yeah.
So like we crash the ship and all of a sudden we cut back on the bridge and it's a repeat of the other scene before we ran into Krenim space a couple episodes back.
Right.
We go right back to the same dialogue. We see the same guy. We run into the same guy. Yeah. And this time he says, you know, this is disputed territory. I would advise you to go around it.
And which we do.
And Chakotay's like, sure.
Sure.
Let's plot the coordinates. Let's go around it. And so all of this is avoided.
No one has any recollection of what just happened, correct? I mean, isn't that how you get that, right? Yeah. I mean, that's it. I mean, once it's been erased, you don't even know that the Krenim even, at least Anorax, no. You don't know that Anorax existed. That's all gone.
Well, Anorax, we cut to this tag here where Anorax is back on Keanu Prime.
Yes.
And he's working hard because he's a workaholic.
Yeah.
And his wife comes in slightly creepily, I will say. I was like, why is she being so weirdly smiling and like, what's up? But she comes in and she's like, oh, it's a beautiful day out. Why don't you stop working and come outside? Yeah. And he takes a moment and then he goes, I suppose that I can make time. And he gets up and walks away. So,
yes.
Loved it. Loved it.
Theme?
What would
my stars? Yeah,
how many stars out of 10 stars? How many would you give it?
I'm gonna give it 7. I'll give this one 7.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I was giving this a 7.5. I think I gave.
Oh, gave it more.
I gave the last one a 6.5.
6.5. Yeah. And
you were 7, I think, on the last part one.
Right. So I went up with mine.
I went up a whole point on this one because I thought.
Why?
I thought the idea of time, how it was explained, was. I loved Anorax's sort of. His philosophical approach to it. I like that Chakotay could sort of connect with that in some ways. Mm-hmm. I love to see this character, this idea of Janeway sort of going down with the ship. And I don't know, this one was a little more epic and a little more emotional than the first. Mm-hmm. The first one I felt was a big setup. That's why I give it a 6.5. This felt like a payoff at 7.5. Okay. What about you? You said 7?
I say 7, yeah. It stays pretty consistent. About the same. For me. Yeah, about the same as before. It's a good episode for sure.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What is your overall theme or your lesson from this?
My theme was make time for the things that matter.
Okay.
That's my lesson I got out of there. Because he was haunted by, Anorax was haunted by the fact that he lost the time with his family and wanted to get it back. You know, Obrist was haunted by the fact that he's sort of celebrating these birthdays of people who are gone. You can't, you know, there's no more time with them. So make time for things that matter. Yeah, that's my lesson. What about you?
Good. I think a couple of things. I think it's a cautionary tale. The cautionary tale part of it is, you know, in that conversation between Anorax and Chakotay, Chakotay was telling him, you didn't have to take out that planet, you know, and Anorax responds with, that's one civilization. You have to understand, you know, I have the power to control everything. That's one. Oh, it's only one civilization. And Chakotay is like, yeah, but even one civilization, even one person is that matters. You know what I'm saying? So the cautionary tale that I'm talking about is that when you get used to eradicating civilization after civilization, you're numb. And the parallel could be someone in the military. You know, if you're used to killing somebody, the enemy over and over again, like it's nothing. Another death is just like, oh, well, you know what I'm saying? So the cautionary tale is you lose your humanity when you, if you're not careful, it's very easy to fall into this thing where you're just like, it's just another life, whatever, you know? So that's the cautionary tale part of it. And so I guess the lesson really is that all life is valuable. Mm-hmm. All life has meaning, you know, every individual, every organism, every living organism has meaning and has value and should be cherished. You know what I'm saying? It shouldn't be so trivial. But if you've been doing it for 200 years, I guess trivial is the name of the game, you know? So I just think the overall lesson is just to realize that every single life has purpose and meaning.
Nice. I like it.
Okay.
Well, that was fun. That was fun. What is next week?
Next week, we will be tackling random thoughts.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Random thoughts is kind of like the Tom Paris fan club from back in the day called Random Flight.
Random Flight.
This is a close cousin. See, that's it. Of the fan club, yes.
So at your fan club meetings, they should only show Random Thoughts, as an episode.
It was the only episode we watched.
Yeah, it's exactly. The only episode you watch. There you go. Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in this week. And once again, next week, Random Thoughts will be the episode that Robbie and I will review. All of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.
Thanks, everybody. See you next week.
See you soon.